Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. 55 years ago today, Richard Starkey replaced Pete Best as the drummer of the Beatles. Michael Seth Starr is the author of Ringo with a Little Help. It's now in paperback, and he joins us now from Manhattan. Michael Starr, welcome.
Thank you, Lori. Thanks for having me on. This is great.
So I want to start with what Ringo Starr, or should I say Richard Starkey, was doing before the Beatles. Let's go back to what kind of child he was and what kind of high school musician he was.
Ringo had a very sickly childhood. He spent, I would say, a total of probably 2.5 to 3 years in the hospital. He had two bouts of illness, one when he was about 4 and again when he was about 11. They called it pleurisy back then. But it was tuberculosis, TB, and he recovered, obviously, but he missed a lot of schooling as a child, and in those days, when you miss school, it's not like today. I mean, they just threw you back in, and without making anything up. I mean, he didn't learn how to read until he was around 8 or 9. A neighbor taught him how to read because he was so far behind on his studies. So school was never a big priority in young Richard Starkey's life. However, when he spent some time in the hospital in Liverpool when he was around 11, second time around, he started playing, improvising drums by picking up what they call bobbins, which were these plastic rolls that held cotton. And he would bang them on his bedpost, and he would bang them around on the dresser next to his bed, and discovered that he had a natural knack of keeping time, rudimentary, because they had a music class in the hospital where they would a music teacher would come in and they would give the kids instruments, and Ringo always picked the drum and kept good time, but also at that point. He had grown up not very well off in Liverpool. He and his father had left the family when Ringo was about 3. Hmm. His father was a baker. He had met his mother in a bakery. They got married. So he did have the support of his grandparents who lived right down the street, but it was basically Ringo and his mother, Elsie. She worked several jobs to keep a roof over their heads. Money was tight. It wasn't... I think later on there was this myth of sort of a dirty-faced kid with ratty clothes running around the streets like Oliver Twist. That wasn't quite how it was. I mean, he always had a roof over his head, and there's a few pictures in the book of Ringo when one of his boyhood friends dressed up in some nice suits that they had bought with money they had saved up. So it wasn't quite that bad, but it wasn't an easy childhood.
I'm wondering about the music lessons in the hospital really quickly, if I could interrupt you.
And sure.
I'm wondering if he had been in the school system, would he have gotten that same kind of attention or opportunity? Would he have sort of hit that either way? He would have gotten to the age where there were music lessons, or was the experience of being sickly and in the hospital sort of, ended up being fortuitous for him?
I would go with the latter, being fortuitous. Now, I don't know what the curriculum was back then in Liverpool in the school system, but I have to believe it was pretty elementary kind of stuff. I mean, no pun intended. It was reading, writing, arithmetic, and of course they had other activities going on and the recess and all that. But I think it was fortuitous that he was laid up in the hospital for such a long period of time. It was over a year the second time. And he had plenty of time to sort of finesse his rudimentary drumming skills.
Right.
And then when he got out of the hospital, he dropped out of school shortly when he was 15, which you were allowed to do back then. And he took a job as an apprentice joiner, what they called, basically at a company called Henry Hunt in Liverpool, making gym equipment for gyms. So he was doing that, and it was considered a good path. He would do his apprenticeship, he would get a job with them, and that was going to be his path in life. He would have a steady job, steady income, but he had other ideas, particularly since he had been exposed to the music scene, not only during his time in the hospital, but going out to clubs in and around Liverpool. And right. Liverpool's a port city, so a lot of the sailors who were coming in from overseas would bring in different sounds, mostly from the U.S. You know, this was the age of Elvis Presley and Chuck Berry and Carl Perkins and artists like that, exposing Ringo and the other three Beatles, ultimately John Lennon, Paul McCartney, and George Harrison, to these sounds. So he fell in love with the music scene. And while he was working as an apprentice joiner at Henry Hunt and Sons, he started to play semi-professionally in whatever bands he could find. I mean, there were several bands that did not last very long, but eventually he hooked up with Rory Storm, who was at that time was known as a big showman in Liverpool and was known as having the best band in Liverpool. The Beatles by that time had formed, but Rory Storm was considered the better showman, better musicianship, was very good at promoting himself and his band. And Ringo joined Rory Storm as their drummer.
Now he's a left-handed drummer.
He's
left-handed, I should say. How does being left-handed sort of change the way he makes music, change his style?
It's strangely enough, and that's a really good question, Lori. He's left-handed, but he never adapted his drum kit to fit a left-hander's style. So he was using a right-handed drum kit, basically playing sort of like the hi-hat with the hand that he normally wouldn't play it with. And so when he did his what they call drum fills, you know, sort of going around the drums, filling in the beat, it always sounded a little different,
and
offbeat, actually, which became his style, and he became known for that and became famous for that. So it wasn't a bad thing, but and he would always say he technically wasn't a very good drummer in that sense, but he always played with his heart. And I think being a left-handed drummer playing a right-handed drum kit sort of gave him a very skewed sound, although he still keeps the beat terrifically. I mean, that was never
right,
a problem.
Right.
But I think with the drum fills, it gave it a very distinctive, let's say, sound. There was a sound back in those days called the Liverpool beat, or the atomic beat they called it. It was just very heavy on the bass drum and the hi hat and the snare, like those three in tandem. And Ringo developed that sound and became known for what they call the open hi-hat once the Beatles came to America and became world famous, and a lot of drummers would imitate that style. But just to back up for a second, he joins Rory Storm and the Hurricanes. He's still known as Richard Starkey at this point. Part of the Hurricane show was they would sort of give each of the players in the band their own little 5 or 10 minute set where they could show off their whatever they did, be it bass guitar, lead guitar, rhythm guitar, whatever. So Richard Starkey at that point had a little vignette in the middle of the show which they started to call Ringo Star Time. Richard Starkey at that point was wearing a lot of rings on his fingers. He wore his mother's wedding ring, and I think he had four rings on his fingers. So people started calling him Ringo because of the rings. And once the Ringo Star Time part of the show would start, after a while he just started calling himself Ringo Star, and the name stuck. And it was perfect because all the guys in Rory Storm, I mean, all the names they used were stage names. Rory Storm's real name was Alan. His first name was Alan. I can't remember his last name, but that was not his real name. And neither was Lou Walters, the guitarist, or Johnny Guitar. His real name was Johnny Byrne. So nobody had real names in that band. And Ringo was a big fan of American Westerns, and there was a Johnny Ringo, John Wayne had played him in a movie. So it fit very aptly. And
How does the fame, let's jump ahead a little bit, and
sure.
You know, how does that change him once he's with the Beatles? How does he change musically with them, and how does the limelight sort of change him personally?
Well, he went from sort of, when he joined the Beatles, he was still with Rory Storm. The Beatles fired Pete Best, They hired Ringo, who they had known. They had worked. The Beatles and Rory Storm and the Hurricanes had worked together in Hamburg, in a place called the Kaiser Keller. The previous year, the Beatles made their chops in Hamburg, as did Rory Storm and the Hurricanes. So Ringo knew John, Paul, and George. Was particularly close to George Harrison there. I mean, you can see there were photos out there when Ringo was still with Rory Storm and George was with the Beatles, of them hanging around and fooling around with each other. You know, George holding a drumstick and Ringo holding a guitar, that sort of thing. So he knew all the guys, and so he was very comfortable in joining them right when they were about to sign their first big deal. And Please Please Me was the first big hit. Ringo's on there, and it just took off from there. And he went from this being considered at that point, he really was considered the best drummer in Liverpool. I think there are still some fans to this day who say Pete Best was better. That's one of those arguments you have in a bar,
right?
You know, for whatever night. But it's part of history. Ringo was the Beatles drummer after they got rid of Pete Best. And you know, you look back today, 55 years later, I mean, we're still talking about the Beatles. They've been broken up now for, 47 years, and they're still making millions of dollars a year in sales and memorabilia, and there are websites devoted to the Beatles and shows, live shows. They have a Beatle Fest here in New York. And
right.
So
does Ringo Starr himself have sort of a philanthropic legacy then? What has he done, you know, now in his later years with what his life was, and what does he continue to do right now? What's his role now in American music and American culture, British music, British culture?
I would say he's considered sort of the elder statesman. I mean, George Harrison and John Lennon both are they're not with us anymore. Paul McCartney is, and we know he's still out there. Ringo still tours with his all-star band every year. And he does have the Ringo Starr Foundation, which I know funnels a lot of money towards saving animals around the world. And he is very philanthropic in that sense. He's taken a little bit of criticism in Liverpool over the years for not paying enough attention to his home city. Mm. Some of it is justified, I think, but some of it's probably a little unfair. I mean, he's a busy man, and he has a lot to do. But yes, he does have a very philanthropic side with the Ringo Starr Foundation. He has done some ads for John Varvatos and others, and that money has gone towards his foundation. Mm. And he's a wealthy man. I know he's not as wealthy as Paul McCartney is, but Paul also wrote the music, so that helps when you write or co-write the songs. You get the majority of the royalties. Ringo was not a songwriter, but did become very wealthy from the Beatles, and success did almost cost him his life in the 70s when he turned to alcohol when the Beatles broke up. And
let's talk a little bit about that. How deep was the addiction and the sort of aimlessness post Beatles? How bad did it get for Ringo Starr?
It got bad enough to the point where he was considering suicide in the mid 70s. He shaved his head at one point, and he said it was either that or kill myself. I just didn't know what else to do. Fueled in part by alcohol, which he now says he realizes when he was drinking, even when he was a kid. I mean, he would at family functions with his mother and his grandparents and relatives would sit around here, and he would get what they call knee walking drunk even as a kid. But yeah. He kind of held it in check during the Beatle years, but it manifested itself when the band broke up, and I think he was aimless. I mean, looking for a way to justify his career. And he had some very early success as a solo artist with songs like It Don't Come Easy and Photograph. But that didn't last long. And once the hits dried up and he started to be dropped by various record labels, and he became sort of a joke. And, the Beatle that couldn't make it. And even John Lennon, I remember when there was this quote from Lennon about when the Beatles broke up, he said, "I'm really concerned about Ringo because I don't want him to be playing dinner clubs in the north of England. You know, he deserves better than that." So it did hit him hard, and it did almost cost him his life. And even once he met and married Barbara Bach, the drinking continued. He roughed her up occasionally. There were blackouts, incidents of him waking up with their house trashed, and Ringo not even remembering what had gone on the night before. And that's when Barbara Bach just said, because she was drinking too, she basically just said, listen, we have to get help.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. And back in the mid-80s, and since then, he's been clean and sober, and he got his life together. Started the All-Star Band right after that in the early 90s, and that was, I think, a good lifeline for him. He could get out and perform, do the Beatles songs, have some other well-known musicians, Nils Lofgren and Clarence Clemens in the early days, and
right.
Todd Rundgren carry the load by doing some of their hits, and Ringo didn't have to have the pressure of doing all the Beatles stuff, and he could be a showman and go out in front and sing and not have to worry about playing the drums all the time. And so I think that's been a good thing for his life.
Michael Starr, the author, is Ringo with a Little Help. Michael Starr, no relation to Ringo Starr, is TV editor at the New York Post as well. Thank you so much for being with us. Fascinating stuff. Come back anytime.
Thanks, Laurie. I appreciate it.